Hi, I'm Femi OK, and you're in the stream. It is the one show on this network that has pledged to bring you the same number of female guests as male guests over the course of a year. Our aim is 50-50 gender parity. So, how are we doing? Here is where we started in 2016. The first couple of years were a little bit rough, I must admit. 2018, 2019, we got into our stride. 2019, not doing too badly at all. For the fourth year in a row, we are proud to announce that we delivered on our promise. We have had more than 500 guests on the stream in 2021. 55.17% were women and 44.8% were men. I do not know how you get percentages of men on women, but there you go. I'm not a statistician. Here's the stream's executive producer, Barry Maloon.
I am delighted that for the fourth year running, the stream has achieved its gender balance goal. It's important that we do this on any year, but as you're about to find out on this show, it was perhaps particularly important this year, a year in which almost every major story that we covered disproportionately impacted women. The coronavirus pandemic, climate change, the US withdrawal from Afghanistan. So I'm really pleased to renew our pledge to achieve gender balance again next year. And I want to do something a little bit different this year. The stream would love to help other media organizations, other news shows, other journalists to also achieve gender balance. If we can do it, so can you. So if you'd like to reach out to find out our techniques, our tips, our strategies, our methodology, please find us on Twitter or email us at stream@aljazeera.net.
Thank you, Barry. We are absolutely serious. Consider the stream as your open source. Here's where to find us again. Our DMs are open on Twitter, the stream. Barry Malone's DMs are open, Malone Barry. And my DMs, always open to you, at Femi OK. If you want to find out how to make your media platform gender balanced, we're here for you. In another year of bad news, the perseverance of women across the world has stood out. Earlier this year, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said COVID-19 is a crisis with a woman's face. The fact is, there are few stories that we cover on the stream that don't disproportionately impact women. We start with one of them, the pandemic. It has taken a massive toll on the female workforce in the United States.
As a small business owner during the pandemic, especially one with small children, it's been incredibly challenging to figure out how to support and cater to a community that was really stripped of all of its services and all of the infrastructure that it had to support it, including school and childcare, and figuring out how to navigate that on behalf of a community and serve it while pivoting and trying to keep our business alive and being asked to take on the ideas of health and safety for them.
We are joined by Martha Ross. She's a senior fellow at Brookings Metro in Washington, D.C. Martha, good to have you. This trend of women coming out of the workplace in the United States, when did you start seeing it?
Well, it was apparent from the very beginning. I mean, looking back to March 2020, when we started to lose 20 million jobs, a head-spinning number, a lot of those jobs were held by women disproportionately. And it has to do with the nature of the recession we were in and the nature of the jobs that women have. Because of social distancing, suddenly going to the store, traveling, staying in hotels, all that was shut down, and those are jobs that disproportionately employ women. So they were hurt pretty hard. And thankfully, we have been gaining jobs back, but we are still 4 million jobs short of where we were in February 2020. And women are still hit pretty hard. There's 2.3 million fewer women in the U.S. working now than in February 2020, before the pandemic. And the number for men is 1.6 million.
Right.
So it's obviously huge for everyone, but it's hitting women harder.
So if we can work out and pinpoint why that why is probably the solution for fixing it and getting women back to work. Why?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it partly has to do with the nature of the jobs and social distancing. It also has to do with childcare and family responsibilities. And with daycares shut down and schools shut down or in remote learning, it was either impossible to supervise and keep your kids safe at home with a job, or really difficult to do that if you were teleworking. I mean, if you had a job where you had to work in person, you simply could not be at home with your kid while they were at home. So you had a really tough situation.
So what are you seeing where you're seeing employers, organizations saying, okay, how do we fix this? Is there any fixing going on? Because we're almost 2 years into our pandemic right now. What's being fixed?
Not enough. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
We had a massive public education campaign about the lack of paid leave in this country. How many people do not have paid leave? And so when they were faced with the choice of watching their kid or going to work, or facing risk factors when they went to work that they didn't want to come bring home with them, if they didn't have paid leave and they stayed home, they were out of a job. Mm-hmm. So this is a huge policy issue. And President Biden did address it in his Build Back Better agenda. But as of now, paid leave has been stripped out of the Build Back Better legislation.
Okay.
We're not where we need to be.
So I am thinking, how do those jobs come back for women who want to be in the workforce for 2022? And at the moment, we're seeing some schools, it's getting into the school holidays anyway, but schools maybe not going back to school because of a new variant. There's still an economic issue with not everybody getting their jobs back. What do you predict for 2022?
It is hard to predict. There were two points where I think we felt a sense of impending normalcy, and each time a variant has come along and derailed that. Mm-hmm. Last spring, after vaccinations, there was more talk about going to work in person, doing more things, resuming life normally. Yeah. Then Delta came.
Martha,
now,
are you trying to say I don't know in a very elegant way?
I am.
Let me help you out here. Who knows? But thank you so much for bringing the stats and the challenge to us as we look at gender gaps in some of the most important areas of our lives around the world right now. Martha, thank you so much. Take care.
Bye.
So, another major story of 2021 in which women were front and center, Afghanistan. The Taliban has been under pressure to uphold women's rights since they took power in August.
When the Taliban came to Afghanistan, they implemented the policy that women cannot go to outside without mahram. It caused that women in Afghanistan are imprisoned and isolated. The school and university doors are closed. The students, especially girls, cannot go to school. The women employees are sent home because they lost their jobs. I requested all countries, especially United States and Canada, please help to women in Afghanistan.
Pashtana Durrani is director of Learn Afghanistan. Good to have you back here on the stream. I love the way that you approach women's rights in Afghanistan, particularly when NGOs, the international community, talk about women's rights in Afghanistan. This is so important. Of course it is important, but you just look at it in a very different way. Share that perspective, because I think it's an important one for our audience to hear.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. The second thing is that when international community Hippocratic, FYI, I should say it again, could justify a war bombing houses, droning people 20 years ago by saying that we are helping the Afghan women and Afghan children in conflict. How come 20 years later that has changed? Today we have the same conflict. People are more starving. There are mothers who are starving. That's why their babies are starving. There are mothers who can't feed their babies. There are women who can't access hospitals right now. There are girls who cannot access schools right now. So I think right now, it's more conflict than it was in 2001, because in 2001, they came and invaded Afghanistan and the conflict started, right? Because right now, nobody has invaded anything, just the regime changed, and right now people are going backpedal, but women are at the forefront of it. So we have to understand that international communities, especially international organizations and people who went there to make their careers, used women rights and will always use feminism and women rights just to make sure that they get a front seat in everything that they do. They get more aid, they get more funding, and use Afghan women, our pictures, our beatings, our starving children for their own purposes.
All right. So, as somebody who stayed in Afghanistan beyond August, when many people were leaving, what is the situation right now in Afghanistan? What do women need and want?
For the 2 months that I have stayed in Afghanistan, one thing I have learned is the fact that economic collapse is hurting Afghanistan now more than anything. But at the same time, one thing we have to look at is the fact that women's rights are being used to actually starve the country out. There are many solutions in place that could have been used by the international community to actually start with the humanitarian aid, to actually help the starving kids and starving mothers, to actually address the digital literacy issues. Right now, they have given all their power to the Taliban. We could have gone in with free internet. We could have gone in with... Can you hear me?
Yeah, well, hey, please continue.
Yeah. We could have gone in with free internet and free radio shows for the digital literacy programs. We have given this power to the Taliban right now that, okay, if you don't let the girls go to school, they won't get an education. Well, then find solutions, and there are solutions. I'm presenting them from the past 3 months, and nobody's even listening. The same goes for economic collapse, right? Okay, the Taliban are the ones who are not inclusive, and they're terrorists and whatever. The last government also had warlords, and it doesn't justify the fact that they should be the leaders. They shouldn't be the leaders. That's the first thing. They shouldn't have been in this place, but then they have been legitimized by the international community to be in that place. That's the second thing, right? And they are brought there by the international community in there. So make a political process, make it inclusive. All minorities, including the women, the 50% of the country, should be there.
Let me ask you something, because, of course, you're stating something that's very obvious, but it seems quite difficult to do. Heather Barr is at Human Rights Watch. She put together on Twitter just a thread of all the meetings that have been done from outside organizations,
yes,
human rights organizations, NGOs. These are all meetings with Taliban and men. All right. Different countries. And Heather basically calls them all out. Here's another meeting with men. Here's another meeting with men. They're not bringing women to the table. How do you do that?
See, that's the whole point. It's men and men meeting each other, and they don't have any solutions. Let me put it clear for you. The men who are coming from international delegations and meeting these Taliban, they don't have any education on Afghanistan. If they did, Afghanistan won't be in this crisis right now that it is. And the Taliban, tell me, and the graduates that they have in the, from the past 20 years, tell me a single school batch of girls graduates from their schools. Tell me a single economic model that they have presented in the past 20 years, apart from opium, that has worked for Afghanistan or the Afghan economy. So it's just uneducated men, both sides. One can speak one language.
Men talking to men with no solutions.
Yeah.
So should these men with no solutions be bringing women with them? What do they need to do? Because so far, there are not women at the table.
Can I be honest?
Yeah, of course.
Most of these people are not looking for solutions. If they were looking for solutions, people like us would be doing the talking, people with digital solutions, people with actual answers to the problems,
right,
to the financial collapse and everything. Right now, they are just making it very political and very figurative.
All right, let's assume some of them are watching the stream. or some of their colleagues are watching the stream, and you said you have ideas. Share one of them that's very powerful that you feel could make a difference today.
First of all, first and foremost, the most simple one, the political chaos can go on. It needs resettlement, and I'm not an expert on it. But yes, when it comes to a humanitarian and aid, we can work it out. Make a 40 women group, a task force that brings in women from all parts of the society, but Afghan women who are educated, who do understand how the aid works. The UN shouldn't be taking part of my aid. It should be going directly to the people of Afghanistan. We should be given the protection by the international community to live in Afghanistan, and we could be working on every province level and in district level on education, humanitarian aid, and at the same time on healthcare. These three things are important and needed right now, but women do need protection to go back and serve in that capacity. The money should be accessible by a private bank and should be accessible to the people of Afghanistan. They should be audited, they should be properly audited, and should be seen by the international community how it's used. That's how you find solution. That's how you run a country, not just by going there and taking pictures with Muttaki, no.
Pashtana, thank you so much for bringing your perspective to the stream. Hopefully some of those decision makers are listening to you and taking your advice. We appreciate you on the stream. Take care.
Thank you.
And now to perhaps one of the biggest stories of our time. In fact, it is the biggest story of our time, and that is climate change. Another crisis with a woman's face.
One of our biggest accomplishments while working at the intersection of climate change and gender impact is ensuring that we listen to the voices of women and girls on the ground, especially because they are the most vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. And this has actually helped us develop more effective strategies for climate preparedness, climate mitigation, as well as sustainability in the community.
One of the biggest challenges that we see in climate change and gender impact is the recognition of women and girls as key stakeholders in climate change decision-making processes. Often women and girls are on the front lines, but their voices are not included enough, and we think that this is going to be a critical issue moving forward to ensure that the solutions that we find to climate change are effective and long-lasting, especially for those that are most impacted by it.
Nijrim Al-Saim is the chair of the UN Secretary General's Youth Advisory Group on Climate Change and chair of the Sudan Youth Organization on Climate Change. Always good to have you on the stream. Now we are talking about the gender gap and the gender gap when we come to climate change, climate activism, climate policy. Nizreen, if we look back at this past year, where have we desperately missed women in climate policy? You can point to and say, you see, there were more women there, we would have had a different outcome.
Yeah, unfortunately, everywhere. I was just listening to the previous speaker from Afghanistan, and I saw the thread that you put in Twitter. Unfortunately, it's the same situation everywhere. Unfortunately, I'm so sad. That we are in the almost 2022, and we are still talking about how important it is to include young women or even women in different processes. Even in the political level in Sudan, not only in climate change, we have a very much similar situation. Although women are the ones who take the streets normally and march against the previous regime, against the dictatorship, against the coup and the military government, we find women are almost neglected everywhere. And recently, on the 19th of December, we had a big demonstration to the presidential palace. Unfortunately, now the forces are back to use rape as a weapon. We confirmed two severe rape cases after the demonstration finished, and a lot of reports are talking about 13 to 15 cases, actually, hundreds of harassments, of course. And this is something very bad, because I see that we're actually going backward in the movement to human rights, to dignity of humanity, not as males or females, but as a human being that we deserve to be treated equally. Mm-hmm. And I also share with the previous speaker that unfortunately, normally men who speaks to men doesn't have solutions to the problems that we have. Otherwise, our countries would not be suffering from every sector, climate change, energy, education, health, everything, everywhere we are suffering. And the simple answer is there is a huge important component of the community, which is the females, the women, the mothers, the daughters, the wives, the partners are not even there anywhere. Mm-hmm. And when anything happened, when a crisis hit, we get impacted the most, and all of the burdens of the household, of the family, of the kids, of everything falls in our shoulder.
Nijing, we notice this as a program who cares about equity around the world. We care about giving people a platform to voice if they don't have a platform. And we realized that we were falling behind in terms of elevating the voices of women, making sure that we had as many men and women coming to our table, coming to our studio. So we just said, this is what we're going to do. This is our construct, and we are going to count and monitor and check every single year. It's something that the United Nations Framework Convention also said we want to do. We know that there are not enough women in climate policy, and we're going to make an effort. How's that effort going?
Well, unfortunately, UNFCCC is a member state oriented, and the process of negotiation and every other processes is member state driven. And if we cannot be represented in our own countries and with our own governments, then the UNFCCC cannot force governments to bring females. Yes, there is a lot of programs to support young negotiators and young females also to come to the negotiation. There is one with WeDo. There is one, I think this is, I am in this picture. Oh, wow.
you're everywhere. When you recognize your own head in a random picture, Nisreen, you know there are not enough women in climate. Okay. All right, so that was a list of the efforts. Which I've, do you know what I realise is that you just say we're doing it and you do it. You don't say, oh, next year, or we're trying, or we're getting there. You just say we're doing it. I am really curious about what the fix is, because every single guest we've had on today's show knew what the fix would be. So in climate, what's the fix?
Unfortunately, it's not separated. I cannot say that the fix in climate is X, because climate is a system-based also problem. If we did not change the whole system, if we did not fix the whole system, then the work with climate change would never be fixed. For example, the different countries' delegation, you can find barely one or two females with 100 male, for example. And these delegations are not brought by UNFCCC. These delegations are brought by the governments of these countries. So it's deeply rooted problem, and it's linked to the inequality that our community lives in and how the patriarchic community is also ruling everything, unfortunately. I can ask you a very simple question. Now we have more than 200 almost countries around the world. How many countries have prime ministers or presidents as females? We can count them in one hand, and even two hands. Mm. We never count the number of men in different positions. How much problems that actually these men could actually solve, and how much the problems that females could solve. I'm a huge fan of the Finland Prime Minister, of New Zealand Prime Minister, of different Prime Ministers who are actually pushing to have females a good image, because unfortunately we get criticized hundreds times more than the normal male get criticized.
Nisreen,
I mean, they're not doing it, but no one is asking them.
Nisreen, I'm just wondering, is this your coming out campaign speech for running for office, for higher office, right?
Unfortunately, our prime minister is expected to resign, and we don't have a government right now in Sudan, so I don't think I will have a political future in my country anytime soon. And I will not carry any kind of other nationalities, because I think I have a country, and this country deserves to fight for.
Nisreen, it's always good to have you here on the stream. You're always very direct. Thank you very much for speaking to us about the lack of women in climate policy, the climate crisis and climate change. who can actually make a difference. Thank you so much, Nasreen. Thank you, Pashtana. Thank you, Martha, as well. And that's our show for today. Let me show you something. You can get in touch with us if you'd like to try out gender parity at your media organisation. The Stream, Barry Malone, Femi OK, our DMs are open. Thanks for watching. See you next time.